She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. Thank you so much for joining us today. This show is sponsored by the Fairfax Companies, and I have to add that their dedication to improving the environment through creative and innovative practices is why Fairfax is a leader in the business of sustainability. Thank you so much, Fairfax Companies, for your support since the very beginning. I am very excited to have as my guest today Teresa Marquez, who is mission executive, which I'm going to ask you about that, Teresa, from Organic Valley. And Teresa brings with her to our show today 40-year background as an organic activist for healthy food. And trust me when I say, just having had a brief conversation with her this morning prior to the show, she has lots of important and relevant information to share with us. So, Teresa, welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm so good to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Okay, I'm just going to do a couple of quick announcements, and then we will get on with the show, and it'll be all about you. Mrs. Green is a proud member of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, where my shows can be heard weekly at dreamvision7radio.com and on Castle Rock Radio in the Colorado area. If you want more information on the exact times and dates for my show broadcast, I invite you to visit mrsgreensworld.com, and you will get the weekly listening and the links to their websites. Remember that we are here live every Saturday at noon Arizona time, and I invite you to join us each week. Remember that you can listen on your iPhone or Droid, and all of the podcasts from the shows are up on my website very quickly after the shows go live. They're there for your listening pleasure. And as always, I invite you to connect with me on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. If you have questions, email us info@mrsgreensworld.com, and we'd love to answer them. And now a shout out about one of our national sponsors, Echo Bella. This company is an outstanding example of leadership in sustainable practices. I say different things about them each week. I am never running out of material, but from the quality and sourcing of their products, to their packaging, to their support of fair trade, their transparency in disclosing the ingredients in their products, and their commitment to the products never being tested on animals has made me a true believer. If you are looking for skincare or makeup from a company that meets the highest, most ethical standards, I invite you to visit their website, www.ecobella.com. And I believe that if you like what you see, which I think you will, use the code Mrs. Green at checkout for your order, and you will receive a 10% discount. We are proud to have them as our partners in preservation of the planet. And one more very quick but important shout out for our Tucson listeners. We are going to have two internationally recognized speakers at an event at the Fox Theater this coming Tuesday night, which would be, I believe, March 27th. Bernard Letier and Jackie Dunn will be talking about creating sustainable economies and their important work around the globe. And I hope that Tucson really has a good showing. These people have been interviewed on every national and international network that I could research. You can purchase your tickets by visiting foxtucsontheater.com, and I certainly hope to see lots of you there. So now on with the show. Once again, it's Teresa Marquez, who is mission executive with Organic Valley. Welcome, Teresa, and thank you so much for being here. Again. So a great way to start for me is always some information about your background and about Organic Valley, because you have been around for a long time. I don't mean you personally, but the company has been around.
Gosh, don't make me sound so old.
I know. And we already talked about that. We're young, forever young. But the company,
Forever Young,
was started in 1988, which is over 25 years ago. And the fact that they're still around, given some of the I just have to throw this in because it is my show, the Monsantos of the world. I'm pretty proud to have you as a guest and to see what's happening in the Organic Valley world. It's very affirming and gives me lots of hope. So now, tell us about your background and the company.
Thank you so much. And I also am so proud to be working for these wonderful farmers. We have like 1,847 farmers now, and it's really a joy, and it's something to be so proud of. It's so wonderful, and I know those of you out there and yourself as well must feel really good to be working at something that's really meaningful. And so having meaningful work is so, so wonderful. And representing farmers is a wonderful thing, too, because when you are working with farmers who are growing beautiful food, it's a really excellent position to be in. And so the fact that I actually get to be the mission executive makes me wake up in the morning and want to myself because I get to really represent the thing I'm deeply passionate about, that I have been passionate about for a long time, and that is how we can use farming to heal the earth through organic agriculture and sustainable agriculture. And I know that I have an awful lot of passion also, and passion, I should say, for just conventional farmers as well. Maybe they are using guides and GMOs and so on, but, all family farmers all over the world, really want to produce great food for, the public. And just how we got to the situation where we have now where we're using like 1 billion pounds of pesticides in the environment every year here in the U.S., we're one of the biggest users of pesticides in the world, isn't really the farmer's fault. At one point in time, there was a man called Butts, and he said, either get big or get out. And so that's kind of the way farm policy has gone. And not just we eaters have become a little bit of the victims, a lot of the victims, the earth system, and also farmers. We really are, I think it's time for all of us to stop and think, is this really the way we want to grow our food? Is this the food that we really want to eat? And so that's just something that I became aware of 40 years ago, and I had several people bring that awareness to me. My mother, bless her, she's passed now, but I'm forever grateful for her insights into food. And also the Rodale Institute, which is the oldest institute serving organic and organic farming in the country. I exactly know when they started off, but it was like in the 50s, I think, and I was still probably in middle school. Also, Frances Moore LePay, I always like to credit her because she wrote this wonderful book when she was just in her 20s called Diet for a Small Planet. And those three things changed my life and set me on a path being an activist.
And set you on a path that has, and you said when we talked this morning about your daughter following your footsteps, and I actually think that my children are better eaters than I am, and they've been a great source of educating for me. Let's talk about the basic word organic. There are so many definitions flying around out there, and in your opinion, what is organic? What is it about? There's a lot of, from my view, misinformation. So tell us your definition of what would absolutely make something organic.
Organic is an interesting word, and now we have a legal definition that the organic the USDA has. But to put it very simple, organic really means all the parts making a whole. And I think that's a very, very important, because a lot of times we like to think of things in isolation. We don't like to see how it's connected. And so organic really is a agricultural production method. It's not really the end product. It's actually the process of producing the food that is really focused on what's in that soil. And so anybody who's in the organic world knows that what's the soil, how you grow, is paramount to understanding organic. And also, it's certain to the food we eat and how the earth is treated. So organic, once all the parts making the whole, but it's also about the soil. And I love the lots of beautiful quotes. And I think one is FDR's. Franklin Delano Roosevelt once said, without a good soil, what is a nation? That was not, by the way, an exact quote. But he recognized that it's one of the most precious resources that it can have is good soil. And we certainly have been incredibly lucky here in the United States because we have a lot of resources and we have a lot of soil. Now, that being said, we are losing our topsoil much, much faster than we're replenishing it. And unfortunately, a lot of that soil, and I'm here in Wisconsin, and I'm 60 miles from the Mississippi River, and much of that soil is going to the Mississippi River. Much of the nitrogen fertilizer is going down the Mississippi River. The pesticides that we use here are going down the Mississippi River. And we now have a dead zone in the Gulf that's the size of Connecticut. That is
and growing.
The result of the kind of that we have, and growing. Yeah, they have a new, name for it. They call dead zone creep.
Ugh.
And when I first read it, I thought, my God, this is the worst in a science fiction movie.
I know it sounds like it does. It sounds like a very scary movie. Teresa, can I ask you? We're getting some really strong feedback on the line. Are you on a landline? When I talked to you this morning, it was perfectly clear, and I'm not sure what to do. But on our end, there's some very weird feedback. So I don't know if you're getting it, too.
Yeah, no, I'm hearing it, too. And I'm on a landline. So should we hang up and call back?
Well, let's just keep going. If you're on a landline, we'll just go on with the show because I want to use every minute. And I don't know. I hope it's not our landline, but we'll look into that, too. So let's go back a little bit.
It could be here. We have a very, very windy day here, a beautiful day here in the Midwest. Also in the middle, our headquarters for Cooperative, which is the farmers who do our thing, is in the middle of a very, very rural
And that makes perfect sense.
Sometimes
you have that. And that's what it sounds like. It's wind. I was up in the mountains last week, and sometimes I had internet and sometimes I didn't. So the quality of what you have to say will far surpass the quality of the sound. Let's go a little bit back to to the founding of Organic Valley and the brand. It's phenomenal to me that you have now become the number one source of organic milk in the nation. Given that you were pioneers, given the growth of other, to me, not as great choices for agriculture, how did it come about to become a true force that is now making our planet healthier? I mean, that's the ultimate. We are one food family, whether we like it or not. So how did that, give us a little bit about that background.
Yes, thank you for saying that, because it is so true that, we're all in this together. We're all connected. It was a wonderful story. Our story is wonderful. And by the way, we just did a 20th anniversary book, and I'm delighted. I'm going to definitely make sure that you get a copy of it.
Yay.
I think you'll enjoy it. But I will say that, that it's such a great company, as I said, and it's really super to think about the number one organic company in the United States today is owned by farmers. And that makes me very happy, too. But, we were birthed in one of the worst decades for farming of the 20th century.
It was about
to collapse.
The 1980s.
So we saw more suicides in the 1980s than we had for many, many years. So it was a very low moment for agriculture. The price for livestock farmers, for dairy farmers, livestock farmers, for all farmers, was so bad that people were just going out of business. And so some families that farm in their family for 3, 4, and sometimes 5 generations were losing it or lost it. And, that's a difficult thing to face, and that's why we had so many suicides. The farmers that started Crop Cooperative, the business that actually owns Organic Valley, and by the way, it stands for Cooperative Regions of Organic Producer Pools. And basically, it just recognizes that we have farmers who pool their product together all over the country in 35 states. But anyway, those farmers were going out of business. They were losing their farm. and they were kind of in a very good situation, and they said, what are we going to do? And these were conventional farmers. Oh, yeah, there was a few backlanders back too, but mostly these were conventional farmers, and most of the farmers that we have in the cooperative today are farmers who come from conventional farming and who just simply decided they had to do something different. They didn't like the way conventional farming was going. They didn't want to use GMO seeds and so on, so they became organic. But in 1988, these farmers were a business, and they said, what are we going to do? And they looked around, and they said, why don't we try this organic thing? At the time, you know, there was no organic milk. So we were like the first organic milk, one of the first. We were certainly were the first nationally, but, you know, we were like a dandelion then, you know, or little organic dairy farmers were popping up all over the United States. Strauss, US Coast, started about the time we did. There was a Pacific Northwest company called Echo Springs that started about the time we did. There were Mont farmers who started about the time we did too. So we were kind of like popping up this idea of certified organic milk, and that we could do something differently. We could actually produce milk without antibiotics, without hormones, which RBGH was just getting going then. The famous hormone that increased cow's milk supply while lessening the lifespan of the cow and other problems. So that was starting, and so there was a real desire for a lot of dairy farmers to not want to farm that way. The organic milk business was launched in the 80s, and
it was one example to me. I kind of remember, I don't want to interrupt, but I just kind of remember that back then it was a lot of moms that demanded, we want organic milk, because of the research that came out that I'd like to talk about in detail later in the show. But it started coming out about the endocrine disruptors and interfering with reproductive process, which, as you and I said this morning, never heard of that when I was growing up. So this was a time when, I mean,
yep.
you talk about a perfect storm. And when I was reading about the company, this may sound a little corny, but I thought these seven or eight farms that joined together in the beginning, I'm not sure what the number was, it was kind of like reading the Constitution. I mean, they sat down and they thought about it, and they included things like regional farm diversity, which is truly a sustainable concept, and they were the thought leaders to put that together, because if you're going to do something that's organic, a part of that to me is regional farm diversity and staying as regional as you can to sell your certified organic products. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It sure did. But you know what was so funny is that they definitely were pioneers, because at the same time, like I said, we had Earl Butt saying, get bigger, get out. And the farm was under attack, and we've lost 4.2 million farms in the last years.
Oh.
We used to be a country of farmers.
Yep.
We used to be a nation of farmers. We used to, the time when everyone was linked to a farm in some way or another, and we almost all had farm background. But not so today, where farming is less than 1% of the whole population. But, you know, that idea of regional farm diversity, that's the way all farms were.
Right.
Decades ago. And so it was almost kind of like one farmer said, when they started talking about going organic, he said, well, gee, you know, I never changed. It looks like I'm so far behind, I'm ahead. So
that's the way they were doing it right, and they kept on doing it right. And I just keep thinking about when you say
he never wanted to use poison.
Right.
So he didn't call himself organic. He had a regional farm. He
just
had
a good farmer.
A diverse regional farm. He was still doing some, they used to do some crops, some vegetables, some dairy, some meat. And so, and by the way, there, of course, as we know today, a diverse farm has a much larger chance of being a sustainable farm.
Right, right. The economic stability.
And even the conventional farmers know that. They know crop rotations are the right thing to do.
And it is the economic stability of keeping the money in the community as much as you can. All of that is the whole definition of sustainability. What about in terms of, as a company, what's your philosophy? And believe me, I know the answer. In terms of consumer education, if you can do that, we have 2 minutes before we have to take a short break, but your company is very committed to consumer education.
Well, you know, we're pioneers in organic, so and you hit the nail on the head, so to speak, when you started talking about months. And endocrine disruptors, well, I'm sure that some of the audience out there probably maybe have never even heard of endocrine disruptors. Do we need a PhD to shop today? It's almost like we do. So we really don't have a chance. Must constantly be not just educating the public or providing information. I really said, we don't want to tell you how to think. We just want you to think.
Right.
And I think we want to do the same thing. We want to provide information is what we want to do. We want to be as honest as we can. And we also are doing it for ourselves because we're always learning. Early on when in the company, we all looked at each other and said, you know, we have to be a learning organization. And I think it's one of the things that is a very, very important foundation principle that's very helped us. We never want to feel like we know everything. And I think that's the wonderful thing about organic. There's this thing called the continual improvement that no matter where we are, let's keep trying to improve.
I love
that. We aren't perfect.
We're going to have to go to a short break.
To be in this idea of continual.
Okay. I don't want to cut you off, but we are going to have to go to a short break. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network with a very captivating interview with Teresa Marquez, mission executive from Organic Valley. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about some of the challenges that you face, how the process works, and the big dream about what has to happen to shift us all forward. Please stay here with me. I'm sure you'll want to.
In the mid-Tucson summer, you would expect it to be over 100 degrees. But deep beneath the University of Arizona's compost heap, temperatures can hit 160. Started by the Compost Cats student group, the U of A Compost Project is collecting tons of waste from around campus and keeping it out of landfills. Gathering garbage and converting it into a useful product for the community? Now that's a hot idea indeed. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
It's got advanced technology. It's got major breakthroughs in technology everywhere you look. It's the 2013 Honda Accord. Hi there, this is Mrs. Green, and I want to share with you that after nearly 40 years of heritage, this is the most stunning Accord ever. The highly respected Automotive Magazine raves that the 2013 Honda Accord offers unparalleled talent of goodness. Please visit Chapman Honda at 4646 East 22nd Street in Tucson to check it out and see for yourself.
You know how they say your donation to Goodwill changes lives?
Well, it's true.
It's true.
Well, it's true.
Goodwill.
Goodwill gave my son a chance.
My mom, hope.
My brother, a sense of purpose.
And help my dad find a job.
Goodwill helps thousands of people.
People like us every year.
People like us.
Every year.
Your donations to Goodwill do change lives. Please donate today.
Go deep underwater without getting wet. Study bugs like a real scientist. Make your shadow move in colors. These are just three reasons to visit the exciting hands-on new exhibits at the Children's Museum Tucson, the region's only museum just for kids. For 25 years, we've ignited kids' imaginations at the Children's Museum Tucson. That's something to celebrate. And admission is only $2 on the first Sunday and on the 25th of each month this whole year. Children's Museum Tucson, where imagination and learning connect.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to, and hopefully we are giving you lots of wonderful things to think about today. I am so pleased to have as our guest Teresa Marquez, who is mission executive for Organic Valley. And I do want to mention, Teresa, several times throughout the rest of the broadcast, that your website is organicvalley.coop. And when I was searching for it, I think that's noteworthy. And if all anyone does when they go there is take, you know, maybe a couple of hours to visit the Beyond the Plate, is that what it is? I will find it in my notes. But I went down there and I thought, oh my gosh, I'm never going to leave this page. It's Beyond the Plate. It's such a treasure trove of information. But we'll talk about it. I mean, it's like whatever you want to know, just go to that page on the website, and it's wonderful. Let's talk a little bit about the challenges. I mean, you are the largest provider of organic milk in the country. And I have some basic questions that I think, if I want to know them, a lot of the people in Mrs. Green's world want to know. How do you, what does it take to become a member of the co-op? And how do you manage the continued oversight so that when I'm buying Organic Valley milk, I know that someone was watching to make sure it's all good?
Hello?
Hello? We still have you.
Oh, good. You're still there.
Okay.
Yeah, I was wondering because you're coming in and out a little bit. You know, we have a very diligent process to oversee the fact, you know, the quality of our milk and all of the laundry list of do's and don'ts that are part of the organic certification, and it's quite huge, to tell you the truth. So there are just two ways that we do it, and or I should say three. The first is that we have a certifier, a third-party certifier, and our certifier is Oregon Tilth, and ATCO, Oregon Tilth, Certified Organic, and they're one of the oldest certifiers in the country. And they actually annually inspect all of our farms, each one of them. And that's a big job.
That is
so
big job.
We say, why is organic so expensive? But, you know, and it's not that certification costs a lot of money, but it certainly adds to the expense. It's the consumer's assurance that that USDA organic seal means something. We actually have third-party certification. But on top of that, we have a very excellent field staff. There isn't a region, and we are in 35 states. There's not a region in the country where we don't have a field staff that's there all the time helping farmers and also, you know, monitoring farmers to make sure that, for example, when the pasture rule passed in the National Organic Program, we visited every one of our farms to make sure that all of our farms are met to the pasture standard. The pasturing is a very, very important part of the standard and very important to us because we know that cows are healthier and happier, and the milk, and we also know the milk, is actually superior in nutrition when it's on pasture, when cows are on pasture. And know this because we've done now the equivalent of about 3 years of testing our pastured milk compared to just regular conventional milk, most of it not pastured, some of it pastured, some of it not. And we know that our milk is higher in conjugated linoleic acid, which are referred to as, and omega-3s, which is very, very exciting because it's omega-3 that we know we want our children to have. And we know we aging seniors also need it because it gives us a lot of lubrication for our brains and for our joints.
And by aging seniors, you mean over 90, right? We have to put a little humor in the show here because you and I said we're forever young.
Right now, it's me and you.
Right, except
but
for...
But the thing with that, we're actually having our study that I've spent, as I said, a few years doing, being reviewed by a party, and they are coming to the same conclusions that we've come to. And that is when you pasture cows, they're healthier, their milk is higher in omegas, you know, when you have healthy cows, you don't have antibiotics and you don't need hormones. And that's the big secret to organic dairy, have healthy cows.
It's so
and by the way,
so
it's the same secret as it is to aging for human beings.
Right. That's exactly right.
You know, be healthy and, you know, be in a preventive mode rather than wait till someone gets sick and then give them antibiotics.
Right. Which that's a perfect segue because one of the things I immediately grasped in our very short discussion this morning is that you have the right message for what I believe to be people that are part of Mrs. Green's world. You have a vision for what is short term, what is long term. And I asked you specifically about your thoughts on spraying pears and apples with antibiotics and the pros and cons. And let's talk about that a little bit because you're right. You can't just... you know, lower the boom and it's all good and we're all pure and we're stopping everything. So can you talk about your philosophy a little bit in terms of the...
Well, you know, I love the saying, you know, don't sacrifice it to the perfect. And so many of us wish that we were in a pure world, perfect world. And I don't know if you followed the Environmental Working Group, so I think you probably know them.
Very much.
They did a number of years back. They're like one of my favorite environmental organizations. They're just so earnest. And they did something called the body burden test, in which they started testing the blood of people. But then they took 10 very special people and tested their blood, and they were 10 newborn babies. And they decided to go with the most prestigious doctors in the most prestigious hospitals. You know, they went to Stanford, to Mount Sinai, and they took 10 hospitals, and they took 10 very, very prestigious doctors to do it. They did Dr. Green at Stanford. They used Landrigan at Mount Sinai, and they gave them these instructions. They saw the blood out of the umbilical cord before you cut it, so that all the babies had their blood drawn at the same time. And those babies each had an average of 140 contaminants in their blood.
Oh.
You know, this is certainly, we talked a lot about moms, and, you know, moms might, you know, be interested in science, and they might even go out of their way to learn a little bit about science. But look, at the end of the world, how much time does a mom have to study science? And so if you are, you're really looking at the precautionary principle, which probably would be a really great idea if all of us looked at the precautionary principle, including the FDA and the USDA, but they don't. Instead, they do the opposite. Instead of saying, gee, until proven guilty, innocent, these practices need more scrutiny. Instead, they say, if these practices don't show too much risk, and so if they come from a risk assessment point of view rather than the precautionary principle point of view, and that's actually the organic industry is there. We're in the precautionary principle point of view. Now, going back now to tree fruit, do I like that are organic? They're now debating whether organic farmers farming, we should call them orchardists, pears and apples, we use an antibiotic to spray for, I believe, what's called air blight.
Yes.
Gee, no, those of us in the organic industry don't like it at all. We'd rather find something else for fire blight, but the alternatives, which are very, very high neurotoxic pesticides, are worse than the antibiotic that will probably be only sprayed once, is going much better than 12 sprays of a very neurotoxic pesticide. So the compromise isn't ideal, but hopefully it is a strong compromise, and that we will all continue to find better ways to put all of our food much more sustainably. And I am a very strong that we do have the solutions. We are so amazing, we humans, human beings, we're so... but if you look at where all our money and research is being spent right now, the majority of it, you know, like 99.5%, is being spent on the next bigger and best pesticide. And if you take a look at the Monsantos of the world and the Dow Chemicals of the world, you'll see that they're making their money on those pesticides, that the biotech industry is not really about saving the world and feeding the world. In fact, we produce enough food to feed the world today. It's about using pesticides and making profit. In that, I am confident we don't need to use $1.2 billion in pesticides, and we do it judiciously. We've used Roundup Ready so bad, glyphosate, other name, that we now have worldwide over 200 superweeds. In the United States, we have over 100 superweeds. A dozen of them are soaked that they have to use. They have resorted to an old pesticide, 2,4-D. The older folks know that it's one of the major components of Agent Orange that we spread in Vietnam. Also known as dicamba, that we're now going to have to be switching to this deadly cocktail for Roundup Ready soybeans. because it can't, well, one, Rhonda Bray left its patent, so it isn't even going to be making that much money for the chemical companies anymore. But worse, it's spun so many superweeds that it's no longer effective.
And how even come people how come people don't do that tiny little bridge? It's the same in regular antibiotics for people. We have all of these super bugs and super viruses. Everything has gotten stronger, and I like to use the word more violent. Why do people not connect the dots and realize that? I've written blogs on this, and one of the blogs was entitled, "Do You Really Want to Eat Something That's Called Roundup Ready?" I don't. I know that. I don't have to be a scientist or a 20, 30, 40-year organic activist. I just used my head. We don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. It's like, really? I don't want to eat something that's Roundup ready. It just doesn't sound good. I don't spray it on my weeds, and I don't want to eat it, put it in my body.
Well, you know, part of the problem is that people actually think the USDA and the FDA are them. Which, after a while, you kind of begin to realize that there's a revolving door between the big corporations, especially Monsanto, and the USDA and the FDA. So they're they're in the hen house here. So that's a problem. In fact, the corporatization of America and the corporatization of our democracy, like you were saying, how come the public doesn't know this? If you ask, I'm sure you're familiar with Citizens United, if you ask people about this, they really don't know. And to not blame the public, because we are probably what I call, I guess at my staff, I say, OW, we're overwhelmed.
We are overwhelmed. I have friends that tell me that. They say, you know too much.
It's like so difficult to even track it all. Like I said, you almost need a petite shop.
I totally agree. I mean, and EWG, one of the things that they do, they are one of my favorite organizations. I don't think I could do what I do without them. But they come out every year with the Dirty Dozen and the Clean 15, and that is actually something. They have a little downloadable PDF that you can take and keep in your wallet or keep in the car so that you know if you can't buy all organic, here's the Dirty Dozen and here are the Clean 15 that you don't have to worry about. But back to Organic Valley, in situations like the 2,4-D in corn and soybeans, there is scientific research about how bad it is, from endocrine disruptors to known carcinogens. What kind
of... Yeah, actually one of the most studied of all the pesticides, because of the fact that all these got back from Vietnam, and at the time they were mostly guys, with terrible... in fact, some of them still have them, and some of the most outspoken people... on to be our ex-Vietnam vets.
Because they know what has happened. They've seen it. So what does Organic Valley, what role can they play in situations like this? Do you work on it educationally? Do you have people that work on education in Washington, D.C.? What is the role, if any, because you're doing enough producing good food for the planet, but do you take a role in situations like this?
We like to stay focused there, and that is producing the very highest quality product that we possibly can. I talked to you about how we have our own staff that is out there. We call them our staffer. And then we also have a third-party certifier. But then we have a really, really excellent meat department. They just are constantly testing everything all the time and saving samples, so on. So I'm very, very proud of our quality department, because I feel very confident that we're delivering the high-quality product we can. So we like to stay there. And, of course, we also... give over $1.2 million in donations every year to those organizations we think are doing the best job they can to put out information, food, and the environment. And to us, the food and the environment are very, very linked, because you know that 70% of our water, our fresh water, is used to produce food. And right now when we look at, and a lot of people say this, and I'm just quoting other people when they say it will be the oil of the 21st century, and we'll have water wars, and we're already beginning to see them. We don't see them as much as if we lived in Africa and some of those other countries. But we do have 7 billion people on the planet right now. And United States, China, and some of the European countries, we're all at zero population growth, but we are adding the millions. I forget what it is, say 80 or 90 million a year in people, and they're all being added in the most compromised for water. So we're going to, and even in those of us in the Midwest are, well, let me just say, every well in the Midwest is polluted with atrazine and other chemicals. Oh. But besides that, we have this aquifer that feeds all the water, these beautiful farms in the Midwest. It's the, I think it's called the Ogallala Aquifer, and it is rapidly shrinking, and it's not being replenished as fast as it's being used up. And this is happening worldwide, certainly something that we all need to be aware of. So this is why looking at our agriculture and looking at ways that we can conserve water in agriculture is critical, because it's using 70% fresh water.
And quickly.
So our
food and
our water and all of our resources, we're all linked.
And it's happening so quickly. I mean, it's accelerating beyond belief when you sit and read, like I do, many hours a day to stay on top of the trends. So we are going to have to take another short break. I am so pleased to be interviewing Teresa Marquez, who's mission executive at Organic Valley. You can find their website, organicvalley.coop. And trust me, there is a treasure trove of information there. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the website, about what your vision is and how you see things trending for not just the country, but for the world. Are people becoming more aware? Because you've been at it quite a while, and I'd like to get the Teresa Marquez view from 40,000 feet and 40 years about what you're seeing as an organic activist, and maybe give us a little bit of hope for the planet and calls to action. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. We don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. Please stay here with us. We'll be right back with Teresa Marquez.
Hi, I'm Abbott Taylor. With over 35 years creating jewelry in Tucson, no one has more experience in designing and making diamond jewelry in Tucson than Abbott Taylor Jewelers. Please come in and see some of the thousands of designs we have created, or come in and have us design something original just for you. Whether you're looking for a simple and stylish graduation gift, your engagement ring, or a breathtaking jewelry piece to celebrate an important birthday or anniversary, you can't beat our competitive diamond pricing. With 100% trade-up guaranteed, set in an Abbott Taylor jewelry design, always using earth-friendly recycled gold. Abbott Taylor Jewelers, exquisite jewelry designs and exceptional diamond deals created right here in Tucson for over 35 years. Abbott Taylor Jewelers at 6383 East Grant Road, on Facebook and on the web at atdiamonds.com. Diamond designs for everyone. Abbott Taylor Jewelers.
Hi there, this is Mrs. Green with some exciting news. The all-new 2013 Honda Accord is here. It's got a new level of sophistication. It's an efficiency expert, and when you drive one, you can discover how EcoAssist can help you increase your fuel efficiency. For a record 26th time, the Honda Accord has been named to Car and Driver's esteemed 10 best list. To check them out, visit Chapman Honda at 4646 East 22nd Street. They have a great selection of 2013 Accords in stock right now.
Do you dare to share? In 2009, the University of Arizona started its car sharing program. Today, students, faculty, and staff have access to a shared fleet of cars that includes 7 hybrids and even the zero emissions Nissan Leaf. Not only does car sharing give the campus community wheels, but it takes all those extra cars off the road too. Now that greens things up, doesn't it? The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
You can save hundreds on home improvement by checking out Habitat for Humanity's Havastore. The Havastore sells new and gently used home improvement items for pennies on the dollar. You can find cabinets, doors, windows, light fixtures, furniture, and much more. Plus, our inventory is constantly changing. You'll be saving money, and all the profits go to Habitat for Humanity Tucson, helping to build a better community. The Havastore is located at 935 West Grant Road. You can reach us at 520-889-7200 or habitattucson.org.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And we're certainly getting a lot to think about today from Teresa Marquez, who's the mission executive at Organic Valley. You can check them out and spend a lot of time at their website, organicvalley.coop. It's really something you'll probably send me an email thanking you about. Organic Valley has been farmer-owned since 1988, over 25 years. They are committed to the highest level of organic milk. Everything that their hands touch, they certify. And I am learning a lot myself about Organic Valley. And, you know, Teresa, when I looked at the website, of course, I've seen it, I've purchased it. And I want to mention a really cool feature, and I will put this up on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all the many things that touch people's lives. But if you go to your website and just put in your zip code, all the stores that carry Organic Valley milk came up within a 10-mile radius. It's, I mean, to me, it is the magic of technology. And you guys have it going on. That's all I can say in terms of your website.
We decided early on, at least I did, when I was a chief marketing executive, I was the head of marketing sales at Crop and Organic Valley for 17 years before I became the mission executive. And the first thing I knew I wanted to do was have a great website, because I really think that social media is very, very important, and it's the future.
You guys have it. I mean, I'm looking there and I was salivating. It's like, oh my gosh, you've really got all the bells and whistles, and it's interactive and it's easy to navigate. So thank you for that vision also. I would love to
thank you so much.
It is so, I mean, really, it is, it made
that.
My job really easy. I can tell you that right now. And I think it would be fun to talk a little bit about Beyond the Plate, because it really does have information. And I have to say, especially for moms, because it seems to me that a lot of times, I mean, let's be honest, moms do a lot of the shopping. They make a lot of the choices about how the family eats in most traditional families, even if both parents work. I mean, I read the research. So how did Beyond the Plate get started, and who feeds that? There's a lot. It has to be fed. I know that. I'm sure it's fed organically, but how do you feed that?
Yeah.
There's so many categories.
Well, we have a whole social media team. Yeah, we have a whole team. And there's several of us all the time who are to feed it, keep it up to date. You know, we want to link also with our partners. As I told you, that we are very... we have a lot of partners. We have over 500 different NGOs and individuals who we actually every year help to support, because we know that we don't live in a vacuum. It's not just us who's doing that. So I think you can see that we're using a lot of different resources, including internal resources. But, you know, to do social media correctly, you do have to make a commitment and spend time. And it isn't always a lot of money that you're spending. It's just human resources.
And you don't want it to, it
so
doesn't even feel, you know, it doesn't feel canned either. I mean, it's very apparent that it's a high quality, but I want it to click on a lot of different places. And I don't think that that's always easy to achieve either. You know, things like, who's your farmer? Well, I want to know who my farmer is and why organic, and your, you know, the background of how you got started, just that story. I'm a consumer, and I'm also Mrs. Green, but I wanted to stay there. So hats off to you. And now let's talk a little bit about, what do you see in terms of the depth and breadth of your experience in terms of the informed consumer? And, you know, a little sidebar, there's such a growth of farmers markets here in the Southwest. And to me, one of the challenges that puts before us is, don't always assume that something you're buying at a farmer's market is organic and safe. I mean, we have people that are set up at ours, and they go down to Mexico and buy their produce and just bring it up and resell it. So just go on a little bit about what you're seeing in your years of being so committed.
Well, we you know, now that you brought up, even though there's probably issues as to, you know, are they just reselling? They still are a very, very hopeful sign about the public's desire not just to be buying, buying directly from farmers, but to be in a place where they meet other people. So all of a sudden they have a whole social atmosphere in these farmers markets where you get to see your friends and meet new friends and talk to people. And maybe, that you know some of those farmers at the market are reselling. Guess what? You get to sit and talk to them about. That's a fantastic thing. So I see farmers markets and also this those CSAs, community supported agriculture.
Right. Yes.
Those are proliferating. Those are very, very hopeful signs. I am someone who loves to feel hopeful and also be optimistic. And I've had my moments where I've felt kind of hopeless and depressed about it. But, all of the people who I've read, I told you how much I really love Frances Morlepay. I love quoting her, and she said once, the situation is serious for pessimism. And that really struck me as, that's correct.
That
and
is
of course,
very
Wendell
good.
Berry has a beautiful... Yeah. And
words
the other
of wisdom.
Quote that I love to... people who know me that I quote a lot is and of course, what is so quotable, but in a poem he wrote, he said, "Choose joy, though you've considered all the facts." And so I feel like our job is tenacious and to be hopeful and to always be saying, okay, this is a problem now. And I have thought about some very easy things, and I'm always trying to figure out, and Frances looked at my inspiration because she's always trying to figure out, what are the solutions? We're intelligent human beings. We know we have all the answers. We just don't know how to work together very well to get them done.
Right.
And say, this is certainly, and I'm not trying to insult the men out there, but I think women have a very important role and a unique role in helping to accelerate change. We're nurturers. We're the first food that we children get.
Right.
And so, do we have a role, a unique role? I think we might. And so I've been thinking a lot about that. We were seeing some very hopeful things as I said, in some of the farmers markets in USDA under Kathleen Merrigan, Deputy Secretary, Know Your Farmer Note. Is an excellent campaign that they launched. And the other thought that I had, there's a negative thing that's happening that speak to really quickly, and that is people have stopped cooking. And I think some of our solutions on healing our planet and the broken food system would be for people to think about cooking from scratch. At this point in time, I don't even want to say yes and use all organic ingredients. I just want to say cook from scratch.
Cook from scratch.
Don't rely on fast food.
Stay away from
that.
That
really isn't going to help you very much. But once we start cooking from scratch again, and we begin this love of food and love of cooking, and this love of nurture our family and our friends through food, I came up with an idea called the Earth Dinner. I always wondered why Earth Day wasn't a national holiday, and then I figured it out. There's no dinner. How can we have a national holiday without a dinner? And so I invite all of you
and a parade
to celebrate Earth Day this year and have a special dinner.
Special dinner.
You can decide what it is. I think there's only one thing that I really ask people when they have an Earth Dinner, and that is, know where your food came from. Be able to say, hey, even if this is cherries from Greece, that's fine, but try and get in touch with where your food comes from, number one. Number two, cook something from scratch. Cook something your grandma cooked. Get in touch with your food history.
And it feels good. It feels like you said, makes happy
the
people.
World. Yeah. I actually think that we can change the world by just taking a quarter turn. And, there's an experiment in Europe now that I think is going to catch hold here, and it's called Are We Entering the Era of Materialism? I think that if we can start looking at our lives and enrich our lives through things like cooking from scratch, meals with friends, simple things for our neighborhood, and become less materialistic, that's the right culture, and that we just make a little bit of a turn in our culture and in our society, and those actions will lead to having a better life and actually enrich our lives. So, it's not, we think that things are too important in our lives now, and I'm not sure, and I think at a certain point in time, and certainly when you hit your 60s like I have, start wondering, is it really things? I think it's the relationships that you have, the love, the love that you have for other people, and just the simple thing, like, taking your family out for a hike, cooking from scratch something that mother might have made, things like that are kind of like almost you price on it. They become priceless.
And disconnecting all electronic devices.
Start pure.
Yeah, I agree. A couple of comments to what you said. In our city, Tucson, Arizona, the food co-op has engaged in an unbelievably cutting-edge, thought-leader approach partnership with a farm here called the Sleeping Frog Farm. So there are food co-ops, of course, all over the country, and they are helping to support Sleeping Frog Farm through, a financial arrangement because the demand for the products was so much higher than the farm could supply. That's a real positive sign of hope that I see. And then one other comment I had.
I see that all over, too.
Yes, yes.
But you're living in a unique city, Tucson's a pretty cool city.
It's a pretty cool city.
There, I've heard a lot about that co-op. I just put a plug for that co-op now. That's a fantastic co-op you've got there.
It really is. It's a really good, and they talk about early on, they were thought leaders, too. I went there back in the day when I was a young hippie and we moved to Tucson. And the other thing that is so important about what you said in terms of cook something fresh is we had Lori David as a guest on our show, who was the producer of An Inconvenient Truth. And she did not want to talk about that at all. She wanted to talk about her book, The Family Dinner. And she was adamant about that. She said, what I figured out in all of this after many years is that the most important thing we can do to make that shift that you referred to is to cook and to sit down at a family dinner, and it doesn't have to be complicated. And she's got some rules about how many times the family has to be gathered at the dinner. There are no cell phones. Sometimes I'm at family dinners, and I'm sitting there talking to my husband because everybody is on their electronic device, and we've started making rules about that. Not my children, but it's like, really, do you need to Google that right now? I don't need to know the answer, so I love that piece of advice.
Yeah, you and I are I think both aligned that it might be the simplest things that are going to give us the best quality of life and actually change the world.
And
one of the other things that I want to push, you don't hear a lot, is just simple kindness to each other, to our pets, to everyone. And I think it's underrated.
I think it's wonderful that you brought that
anyway,
up.
We don't have to become, huge didactic, creatures. We have to do simple things.
Simple acts of kindness. And I don't know if you're familiar with Ben's Bells, but their whole tagline is intentional act of kindness. They're located here and they're rapidly expanding their message. They're opening in Newtown. After the shooting. So I put a post on Facebook today about if we practice intentional acts of kindness to the earth, it'll be easy to practice intentional act of kindness to each other. So you're right, you and I do think alike. We are almost out of time. I have to say one more time a sincere thank you to you, Teresa Marquez, who's the mission executive at Organic Valley. Their website is organicvalley.coop. And follow me on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram, because that's the way that you stay connected and find out about these amazing guests. I'm really excited to announce that next week we have Jennifer Dianto Kemmerly, who's the director of Seafood Watch at the world-famous Monterey Bay Aquarium. If you're a seafood lover at all, this is one show you'll not want to miss. Teresa, thank you for being on the show and for what you do every day to make a difference for all of us.
Thank you so much, Gina.
My thanks
to
everybody
so
back there.
World. I think you're the one changing the world here.
Well, I appreciate that, and I hope you're right. I'm doing my part. Make it a great green day,
I'm
everybody.
Do my part, too.